Hi all. Can you hear me? I wasn't hearing anything. Yes, you can hear me. Okay, I wasn't hearing anything from Ron, so I wasn't certain. But yeah, I can go ahead and start a little bit early. Sometimes I'm not here at my desk 2 minutes before, 3 minutes before. I'm still getting water and that kind of thing. But today, I happen to be sitting here, so so that's not a problem. So this is Regina, and welcome to my sharing from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Tonight we are going to begin with 697. I won't begin until after playing a song, because I like to play a song sort of as a prayer. But I will go ahead and give you the link in the room for those of you who like to follow along as I read from my journal. During the Seven Steps to Awakening, I will be sharing quotes from a book called The Seven Steps to Awakening, and then I will be sharing from my journal. And my journal is what I wrote as I contemplated these quotes. Why don't I start by just playing a nice song to get us centered? I think I'll play a song from the Liquid Mind meditation, if I can find one that's not too long. Most of these songs are quite long. Well, I guess they're all kind of long. This one's not too long. So here's a nice song from the Liquid Mind meditation CD. So everyone, please enjoy. And that's it, the liquid mind meditation. So I'm going to begin sharing from the Seven Steps to Awakening. The quote that I am reading right now comes from Step 3 of the Seven Steps. It's also a quote from the Yoga Vasistha, and this is the quote. The existence of the mind causes misery, and its cessation brings joy. The existence of the mind causes memory. I'm sorry, causes misery. I was having a memory. I'll tell you about that in a moment. The existence of mind causes misery, and its cessation brings joy. And what I was remembering was a woman. I don't remember her name, but that's, of course, not important anyway. But when I was in the Air Force, I went through, 9 months or so of technical training. I don't remember how long the training was, close to a year, maybe even a year. And this woman was in technical training with me. And then we were both stationed in Okinawa, Japan together for a couple years. So I knew this woman for around 3 years. And I didn't know her super well. I mean, I worked with her, but we weren't close friends. And the reason we weren't close friends, I was a very happy person, going places, doing things. And she was an unhappy person. And all she did when she wasn't working was sleep. She slept all of the time. And I came to realize that the reason she slept was because when she was asleep, she wasn't suffering. That was her way of getting away from the mind, right? So she would go to sleep because when she was asleep, she was in that blissful state of non-mind. And this, of course, was long before I knew anything about the spiritual path, even long before I knew that I was also suffering. It's just that my form of suffering, wasn't as obvious or wasn't as acute, maybe, as hers. I didn't have a need to escape my form of suffering. I had learned to tolerate my form of suffering. And in fact, some of you may have heard me tell the story that I always perceived myself as happy. And I always did. And so did others. You know, I was one of the people that people would speak of and they would say, oh, she always makes lemonade out of lemons, or she always sees the silver lining in the clouds, you know. And in fact, when I first started studying A Course in Miracles, there's somewhere, it seems like it was fairly early in the course, where Jesus says something like, you think you're happy, but you're not. And I suppose that should have been my first indication that my happiness came from denial, because I actually yelled at Jesus in the book, you know, like you yell at the TV. I yelled at Jesus in the book and I said, prove it. So the fact that I was upset by the fact that, you know, A Course in Miracles is telling me I'm not happy should have been the first indication that there was something there. But the universe took me up on my offer when I said, prove it. And something shifted and I began to notice my own misery. I began to notice my stress at work. I began to notice my aggravation and sometimes even hatred of some people that I just hadn't seen before. I began to even notice how angry I was with my daughter. So just as this quote says, the mind causes misery. I keep saying memory. Maybe because I'm looking back. The mind causes misery. And it's the mind cessation that brings joy. Another thing, prior to the spiritual path, one thing that I always loved and was always looking forward to was my next vacation. Fortunately, I've always had jobs that gave me a lot of vacation. I've always been that way. So I've always been able to take vacations about every other month somewhere. And back in the olden days, before I was on the spiritual path, I was always involved in planning my next vacation. Because just like this friend of mine in the Air Force escaped her mind by going to sleep, I escaped my mind by going on vacation, because when I was on vacation in a different environment away from my day-to-day life, I somehow allowed myself to be in the moment. And so I was not in the mind thinking about everything going on. So I experienced that joy on vacation. I thought it was the vacation, but actually it was just the not being caught up in the mind. In fact, it seems like I read Eckhart Tolle once saying, this is why people love TV, a lot of people, because when they're watching TV, they're not in their mind. And so that relaxation they feel when they watch TV is that relaxation of being out of the mind. And of course, this is why people take drugs, drink, even when sex becomes an addiction, this is why sex becomes an addiction. This is why people shop, right? This is why people do all eat, right? All sorts of things. Whatever seems to be temporarily taking them from the mind, they can become addicted to. But that isn't really the answer, because all of those things are temporary, and they also have their backlash. And so the real answer is to learn how to let go of the mind. Learn how to let go of being caught in our circular thinking. So with that said, I'm going to go read what I wrote in my journal for 697. What is the only cause of suffering? And by the way, I wrote this on January 29th, 2013. So listen to how honest I am in my own journal. This is very important, because I'm not sure everybody is perfectly honest in their journal. I know some people are, but I think some people write what sounds spiritual, if you will, rather than really, really looking. So listen to what's going on in my journal. What is the only cause of suffering? I know the right answer is mind. But this needs to be understood on a metaphysical level. I can see, as a well-fed, healthy person who has adequate love and shelter, that I am only hurt by my thoughts. But what of those who are hungry, ill, homeless, or lonely? In order to see that mind is the only cause of suffering, one must see that mind is a projection device. I have some experience of seeing mind as a projection device, but doubt remains also. This needs to be seen more clearly. So what I'm saying in my journal here is, you know, intellectually, I know the correct answer to the question, the spiritually correct answer to the question, what is the only cause of suffering, is the mind. But what I'm also saying is, I'm not convinced of that. I think that there can be physical suffering that has nothing to do with the mind, nothing to do with the thinking, nothing to do with the thoughts. And I need to look at this belief. And the funny thing is, this was written in January of 2013, and in about March of 2013, I actually had the opportunity to look at this belief. I went to Israel that year to walk the Jesus Trail. And I was actually in a lot of pain walking the Jesus Trail, but I didn't suffer, even though I was in a lot of pain. I was, you know, well, maybe I was on my vacation high, right? I didn't suffer. I wasn't in the mind. But when I came back from Israel, I had picked up some kind of a sickness, an illness in Israel. And I don't know what this illness was, but when I got back from Israel, I was in great, great, great pain. And when the sickness first hit, I was home alone. And I was laying in bed, and I was in so much pain that there's a picture of Jesus that hangs on the wall in my bedroom. And at one point I cried out, "Jesus, help me, I'm suffering." But I remember I was laying there for hours because I was home alone. And I remember trying to separate myself from the suffering, and I couldn't. I couldn't. The suffering was just so great. It was occupying every bit of my attention. And I couldn't in any way separate myself. I couldn't become the observer of the pain. And this is really what this journal entry 697 is saying, is, you know, I don't think that it's 100% true that the thinking is what causes suffering. I think that there's other types of suffering that have nothing to do with thinking, and if you happen to experience that, you are going to suffer. And this is what I experienced laying on the bed. I was suffering. And like I said, I cried out to Jesus, "Please help me." Danielle lived with me then, and she came home, I don't know, around 5 or 6 that evening. And she came into the bedroom where I was lying, and I said, "Danielle, I'm suffering." And she said that really caught her attention, because I've never said anything like that to her before. So Danielle is a nurse, and she called a friend of hers who is a nurse practitioner. And that nurse practitioner, because of a relationship with Danielle, I suppose, was willing to write a prescription or call in a prescription, which Danielle went and picked up, and they gave me some medication, and that was around 6 in the evening. It seems like it was about 2 in the morning before the pain subsided, but the medication did do something and the pain subsided. And I was still sick for a few days after that, but that intense suffering was over. And once the intense suffering was over, the thought was, and maybe some of you all know this thought, the thought was that I was somehow guilty or a spiritual failure for having suffered. And I knew enough to know that that thought was ego. And so I knew enough not to believe that thought. But it brought up a curiosity in me. It brought me back to this curiosity, you know, is suffering real? And no, I don't know what the illness was. Just something I picked up in Israel is all I can say. Do I know that suffering is not real? You know, I've learned things like attack is not real, betrayal is not real, rejection is not real. But what about suffering? You know, it seems so real. Do I know that suffering is not real? And I just kind of laid there, you know, with this question in my mind, and also with a willingness to see anything that might be in my mind to have caused suffering that I needed to see. But I didn't go on what I call a witch hunt. I didn't go searching in my mind to figure out if there was something there that made me suffer, or whether physical suffering is just a reality. I didn't go looking. I just kind of rested in this state of openness. And as I rested in this state of openness, several memories started coming into my mind. One was from January of 2013, around the time this journal entry is written. My mother had open heart surgery, a quadruple bypass or something like that. And she was telling me a story after the surgery about how they had this tube down her throat. And normally that wasn't a problem because she was so drugged that she didn't care. But the medication began to wear off, and they knew in 30 minutes they were going to take the tube out anyway. So for the last 30 minutes, she was not medicated, and this tube was in her throat, and her hands are tied to the bed. They tie you down, I guess, when you have a tube in your throat. And like, she was gagging, and she felt like she couldn't breathe, and she wanted nothing more than to have that tube out of her mouth, and there was nothing she could do. And she was telling me this story, and I remembered the feeling of my skin crawling, and I remembered in that moment believing that suffering is real. And I also had another memory where maybe in February of that year, I had gone with Tom Conway up to Colorado Springs to a little meditation course, and we were driving back, and we were talking about the fear of death. And I said, you know, I don't really think I'm afraid of death. I think I'm afraid of suffering. And also, during this illness, I felt to pull out this movie. It's an older movie that somebody had given me as a gift many years ago, and I'd never even taken it out of the cellophane wrap. So I took it out of the cellophane wrap, and I decided to watch it. It's a long movie, like 6 or 12 hours or something. You know, it has many CDs. It's Lonesome Dove. Some of you may know Lonesome Dove. And so I'm watching this movie, and there are scenes in that movie where there's suffering happening, and I started noticing just how, again, my skin would crawl, how resistant I was to the idea of suffering. And as all of these memories and these experiences began to just kind of show up in my mind, what I came to see was that I had a belief. I had a belief. By the way, beliefs are in the mind. I had a belief that suffering was more real than truth. You know, kind of like it's okay to play this spiritual game of the truth is true and the truth transcends everything. And that as long as we have a comfortable life, like I described in this journal entry, right, I'm well fed, I'm healthy, I have adequate love and shelter, that then it's okay to pretend like spirituality is what will make you happy, to pretend like, letting go of thoughts will set you free from all suffering. But boy, when something that really hurts hits, then it becomes obvious that physical suffering is more real than those ideas. But I saw, here's what's important, I saw that was a belief. I saw that was an idea in the mind. And I realized that if I believe suffering is more real than truth, I will experience suffering as more real than truth. I realized this is in the mind. And so at that point, once you discover a belief like that, at that point, the only thing I could do was give my willingness to see differently. You know, you can't force yourself to unbelieve a belief like that. You just admit it's there, and you give your willingness for it to be healed. And then I actually trusted that it would be healed. Well, I have had experiences of pain since then, a couple of different times. Probably the one that was maybe the biggest pain was last March when I was thrown off of a horse. That really hurt. Listen to me laugh. That really hurt. I mean, everything hurt. In fact, I didn't even know for sure if I would ever walk again when I first got thrown. Yeah, I was going to tell the broken wrist story. That came earlier. But I think that if I want to keep the time short, I think I'll just tell the horse story. I got thrown from this horse and I was in pain, a lot of pain. Okay, there was physical pain, but I experienced no suffering. This is amazing. I experienced zero suffering. In fact, through the entire experience, I was happy. I noticed myself as awareness. I didn't even know at first whether I would ever move again. That's, whether I was paralyzed for life. And I was in acceptance of that. There was also the time, which was about a year before that, that Lynn is mentioning when I fell off of a ski lift. And I broke my wrist. I didn't just break my wrist. The surgeon described it as a train wreck. I really crushed my wrist and had to go into surgery. And again, there was a lot of pain. In fact, at one point I almost passed out from the pain, but there was no suffering. There was no break in my joy. There was no break in my happiness. So what I discovered from this is that suffering does come from the mind. Suffering does not come from physical experience. That doesn't mean there isn't pain, but believe it or not, pain isn't the cause of suffering. Suffering happens because of what your mind is telling you about the pain. And so when I wrote this journal entry, I'm kind of saying, I don't really believe that yet. And you know what? In January of 2013, I didn't. And in March of 2013, I really saw that belief that suffering is more real than truth. I saw it very, very clearly and gave my willingness for it to be healed. And, you know, you can never say for sure, I suppose, whether something is absolutely healed or not. But I can tell you that, again, I've had, you know, two great pain experiences since then. And there was no suffering. So I now know that pain doesn't have to cause suffering. I know that that's the thoughts about the pain. It's what the mind is telling you about the pain. That's what causes suffering. So again, 697, there was something else in this which I want to talk about too, but let me read the journal entry again. What is the only cause of suffering? I know the right answer is mind, but this needs to be understood on a metaphysical level. I can see, as a well-fed, healthy person who has adequate love and shelter, that I am only hurt by my thoughts. But what of those who are hungry, ill, homeless, or lonely? In order to see that mind is the only cause of suffering, one must see that mind is a projection device. I have some experience of seeing mind as a projection device, but doubts remain also. This needs to be seen more clearly. So another thing that's happening in this journal entry is because I did not believe at that point that mind was the only cause of suffering, I thought, well, you know, this has to be a metaphysical statement. He can't be talking about, well, for lack of better words, he can't be talking about the personal experience, because if a person is in enough pain, they will suffer. I thought that pain and suffering went together. Thought, I don't anymore, but I did then. And so I thought, so he must mean that the mind, as a projection device, is what's painting the picture in the world with painful scenarios. For example, you know, starvation, you know, the lack of food comes from the fact that we all believe in lack. And war comes from the fact that we all attack and defend in our own minds. And, you know, this is true too. This is true too. So there's really two levels happening here, and both levels are true. One level is, if I have a belief such as suffering is more real than the truth, that's exactly what I'm going to experience. But even the fact that we have things like disease and starvation and flooding and earthquakes and war and all of those other things in the world, that comes from the mind as a projection device. So both pain and suffering come from the mind. And so when you realize that both pain and suffering come from the mind, you really realize that the only answer in order to create what I'm going to call peace for everyone is to let go of mind. And in fact, those of you who know the story of Buddha, you know this was Buddha's motivation, right? As Prince Siddhartha, when he went out to look at the village surrounding his father's kingdom, he discovered sickness, old age, and death. And again, he was a fit young man. Himself, he was not suffering, but he had a compassionate heart. And it just broke his heart to see the suffering that was happening for others. And he vowed to discover the end of suffering for everyone. And what he found as the end of suffering for everyone is the letting go of ego, or what here is being called the letting go of mind. So letting go of certain types of thinking really solves the problem of suffering at two levels. One, at the what I'm going to call the personal level. You know, like my experience right now, at least the experiences that I've had in recent years, is that pain does not cause suffering, that a belief causes suffering. But in addition, as I continue to let go of mind, and as all of us continue to let go of mind, there's less and less lack energy coming from our thinking. There's less and less attack and defense energy coming from our thinking. And so this energy is not there painting pictures in the world, not creating pain, which of course provides the opportunity for suffering for anybody who will still believe in suffering. So again, this particular quote, the existence of the mind causes misery and its cessation brings joy. And from the journal, what is the only cause of suffering? I know the right answer is mind, but this needs to be understood on a metaphysical level. I can see as a well-fed, healthy person who has adequate love and shelter that I am only hurt by my thoughts. But what of those who are hungry, ill, homeless, or lonely? In order to see that mind is the only cause of suffering, one must see that mind is a projection device. I have some experience of seeing mind as a projection device, but doubts remain also. This needs to be seen more clearly. So I'm going to move on to 698. In the Seven Steps to Awakening says, as long there is mind, there is no cessation of sorrow. When the mind ceases, the world appearance also ceases to be. The mind is the seed for misery. So this is most definitely referring to the mind as a projection device, because it says as the mind ceases, the world also ceases to be. As long there is mind, there is no cessation of sorrow. When the mind ceases, the world appearance also ceases to be. The mind is the seed for misery. So I'm going to go ahead and look at 698 in my journal. What is mind? Mind is thoughts, attention, decision making, and interpretation, also known as judgment. I give this answer from my own experience and observation, not from learning. What are you feeling now? Obstinate. Human. Ignorant. Or lacking in the ability to see beyond the human perspective. Where do these interpretations come from? The mind. Then, what is mind? It is a way of understanding everything from a strictly individualistic point of view. Is mind correct in its understanding? No, it is interpretive. The power of mental interpretation is much greater than mind itself imagines. Mind does not literally project. That is a symbol. Mind interprets, and its interpretive power allows it to experience that which is literally not there. Just as you experienced willingness as obstinateness a moment ago. And then I have a note at the bottom. In this inquiry with myself, I felt like an obstinate child who was unable to see the metaphysics beyond the human perspective. Simultaneously, I followed this inquiry, trusting it would bring me to clear seeing. Therefore, obstinate was an interpretive illusion. Willingness and trust were present throughout the inquiry. Now, this is extremely interesting. Every now and then, you know, people write to me, and every now and then someone will write to me saying, you know, they aren't willing. They aren't willing to see differently. They aren't willing to, you know, feel differently about a particular thing. They're just not willing. And I say, you know, that's not true, because if you weren't willing, you wouldn't be writing to me. You know, that just the fact that you're writing to me about this shows that you are willing. And that seems to have been what was happening to me in this particular journal entry this day. And again, what's happening now I have hindsight. This was still January 2013. Now I have hindsight. What's happening is I'm getting closer to this belief that I haven't uncovered yet, this belief that suffering is more real than truth. And so because I'm getting closer to this belief, you know, the ego is kind of acting up in a protective, defensive way. And this is where this feeling that I'm being obstinate, this interpretation that I'm being obstinate, is coming from. And obstinate here means not willing, right? But it's not true, because if I was obstinate, if I was not willing, I wouldn't have been sitting there contemplating the seven steps. So mind was lying to me about my own willingness. And I was believing the interpretation. So that's the degree to which mind can lie to us. Mind can tell us, I'm not at all willing. I don't want to see beyond this. Resistance is all that I am. And that's a total lie. And we're just believing a lie about ourselves. So one thing that's helpful to understand is the degree to which we listen to mind, I suppose. How mind can say anything about me and I'll listen to it. I will believe mind if it says I'm not willing. I will believe mind if it says I'm stupid. I will believe mind if it says I'm cruel. I will believe mind if it says I'm unworthy. I will believe mind if it says I'm guilty. And all of that stuff is not true. But what this is also saying, and this is quite interesting, because although we talk about the mind as being projective, and at one level, I guess you would say that it is, but this is actually talking at a higher level. You know, in A Course in Miracles, it talks about level confusion. Well, this is a place where it's moving from one level, the level of world experience, to another level, the level of truth. And what this is saying is there is no such thing as projection. Because all there is truth. We could call projection an appearance only, but in no way is it a reality. There's no real such thing as projection. There's only truth. But mind has such a powerful way of interpreting for us, and we believe it so much that we believe whatever mind is telling us, including what mind is telling us we're looking at. You know, if mind tells me I am looking at a computer sitting on a desk and that I am a body sitting in a chair, I think this is all true. But it isn't true. And if we were to step outside of mind, if we could just pick our soul up, if you will, and place the soul outside of mind, we would see there is no computer, there is no desk, there is no body, there is no chair. There is no projection. There is only truth. And as some of you know, I did have that opportunity once where somehow I stepped outside of the body, outside of the mind, and I shifted into an apple, which has no mind. And when I was experiencing myself as the apple, there wasn't even an apple, you may remember. There was only light. There was no apple. My daughter took a bite out of me at this time, but I experienced light interacting with light. There was no daughter. There was no teeth. There was no apple. There was no projection. So projection, although it is experienced, so at one level, we don't want to deny it. In fact, it's stupid, I think, for us to deny projection at the level of experience. And I think that it's still very helpful for us to understand that attack thoughts create attack appearances, right? Lack thoughts create lack appearances. Guilt thoughts create guilt appearances, plus those experiences for ourselves at the personal level. And therefore, it's very helpful to do everything we talked about in the last quote, which is letting go of all of these types of thoughts. A, the experience will die on the personal level, just like my experience of suffering may be dead. B, we help to give less energy to those appearances in the world. And if enough of us did that, the world could become a more harmonious appearance, right? All of that is still helpful. But it's also helpful to understand that projection is not reality. Or at least helpful to accept that possibility and to give our willingness to see it as a direct experience. It raises our eyes up from thinking that this is reality, and it points our eyes in the direction of true reality, so that we can awaken to that. So again, although we say mind is a projection mechanism, and we're going to continue to read that in a lot of different good spiritual teachings, like A Course in Miracles and the teachings of Inner Ramana, etc., etc., but that is a symbol. In truth, there is no projection. It's an interpretation of light. And the apple knows that. All that's here is light. So again, the quote in the Seven Steps to Awakening, as long as there is mind, there is no cessation of sorrow. When the mind ceases, the world appearance also ceases to be. The mind is the seed for misery. Okay, and so number 698 in my journal. And what I'm going to do this time is as I read through this, I'm going to tell you when it's intuition speaking and when it is the personality of Regina answering, because both are happening here. So intuition asks, what is mind? And Regina answers, mind is thoughts, attention, decision making, and interpretation or judgment. I give this answer from my own experience and observation, not from learning. And then intuition asked, what are you feeling now? And Regina answered, obstinate, human, ignorant, or lacking in the ability to see beyond the human perspective. Intuition asked, where do these interpretations come from? Regina looked and then answered, the mind. Intuition asked, then what is mind? Regina looked and answered, It is a way of understanding everything from a strictly individualistic point of view. Intuition asked, is mind correct in its understanding? Regina looked and said, no, it is interpretive. And then intuition said, the power of mental interpretation is much greater than mind itself imagines. Mind does not literally project. That is a symbol. Mind interprets, and its interpretive power allows it to experience that which is literally not there. Just as you experienced willingness as obstinateness a moment ago. And then Regina wrote as a note at the bottom, in this inquiry with myself, I felt like an obstinate child who was unable to see the metaphysics beyond the human perspective. Simultaneously, I followed this inquiry, trusting it would bring me to clear seeing. Therefore, obstinate was an interpretive illusion. Willingness and trust were present throughout the inquiry. All right, so I'm going to move on then to 699. 699 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, I think I used this word a moment ago, the very nature of the mind is stupidity. I don't remember when I used it, but I heard the word stupid come out of my mouth, and I was a little bit surprised because I don't usually use such strong language now. But here we've got it. Here we've got it coming from the Yoga Vasistha. The very nature of the mind is stupidity. All right, let's have a peek and see what I did in my journal. Mind interprets, which is to see what one wants to see through the act of choosing to see it. Mind is not natural. Natural does not make choices. Natural is. So again, the quote, the very nature of the mind is stupidity. So what I am doing in the journal entry is I'm looking at the difference between natural nature, and the mind. And of course, what I've just seen from my previous contemplation is how incredible mind is at interpreting, how mind can even interpret trust and willingness as obstinate. And I've just seen that for myself. So I write in the journal, mind interprets. But then I define the word interpret. Mind interprets, which is to see what one wants to see through the act of choosing to see it. Interpretation is to see what one wants to see through the act of choosing to see it. Now again, we're still looking at January in 2013, so I've not yet gotten to March of 2013 where this belief is uncovered that suffering is more real than what we call truth, right? But what this is saying is exactly what I discovered in March when I looked at this belief, when I discovered this belief and looked at it. I am going to suffer from pain if I have the belief in my mind that suffering is more real than truth. That idea is what causes the experience of suffering. And who chooses to believe an idea that appears in the mind. You know, there's something in the teaching of Inner Ramana that's quite interesting. In fact, I read it here in Pueblo last week to some friends, and when I read the paragraph to them, they started laughing because it's so true. Let me see if I have Inner Ramana here on my desk. I do. Let me see if I can find that paragraph. I just read it this week. Okay, here we go. If you hold up an idea and shout that it is true, you are attached to the idea because you are holding to it. But if you let go of the idea, it will go away. The idea has no life, and so it can have no attachments. The idea is not attached to you. You are attached to it. If you let it go, it will go. Because an idea cannot have a desire on its own that will cause it to stay. An idea cannot have a desire on its own. An idea does not have life. So any idea that we suffer with, and still when I talk to people, the most common idea that people suffer with is what I call the I am bad thought. That intense sense of unworthiness, that intense sense of being less than everyone else, and even more than less than everyone else, but the least of, right? And people say, I just can't let this idea go. I just can't let this idea go. But the idea is not holding on to you. Yeah, the scum of the earth belief. The idea is not holding on to you. You're holding on to it. You're holding on to it, just like I was holding on to the idea that suffering is more real than truth. Now, lots of times, in fact, the majority of the time, the reason that we are holding on to ideas is because we do not yet see that we believe them. The believing is happening kind of outside of our awareness. But once we become aware that we are believing an idea, we can then begin to make a different choice. Like when I was telling you this story a while ago about when I was suffering with this illness that I got in Israel. I told you that one idea that came into the mind was that I was guilty for suffering. You know, kind of that idea that a good spiritual student wouldn't suffer. So therefore, I must be a bad spiritual student. I'm guilty. And I told you all that I already knew that idea wasn't true, so I put that idea aside. You see, I didn't hold on to it. What many people, if not most people, would do would grab onto that idea. They would believe that idea, right? But who chose to believe the idea? And so that's what this journal entry is saying. Mind interprets. And what interpretation really is seeing what we want to see through the act of choosing to see it. Now, we may say on the conscious level, but I don't want to see myself as the scum of the earth. Or I don't want to believe that suffering is more real than truth. Maybe we just have to define the word want differently. You know, it's not want like you want chocolate. Where you sit around thinking about, how can I get chocolate, or how can I get more money, or how can I get sex, if that's what you want. It's not like that kind of wanting. But yeah, it's like an addiction, right? When you're addicted to something, whether you're addicted to food, whether you're addicted to alcohol, whether you're addicted to tobacco, why do you remain addicted? Because you don't yet want enough to step out of the addiction cycle, right? To transcend the addiction. When people want enough to transcend those addictions, they do, right? So you may be addicted to believing you're guilty, or you may be addicted to believing that suffering is more real than truth, but you have to say that at some level you're still wanting that more than truth. How did I come to let go of the belief I am bad? my experience was wanting truth more. That's also how I let go of the belief in rejection and the belief in betrayal and the belief that suffering is more real than truth. So it is helpful. You know, Ken Wapnick used to talk about this, I believe. It's all over NTI. It is helpful to look at what we truly want and to consciously choose what we want and to let go of what we don't want. So do I want to believe that I am the scum of the earth? Or do I want to realize the truth about myself? Because I can't have both. And if I want to realize the truth about myself, then every time mine shows up with its interpretive proof of how unworthy I am or how shameful I am or how guilty I am, I need to realize that I'm the one that's choosing to believe the idea. And through willingness and through desire to see truly, let the idea go. Let the idea go. So, mind interprets, and again, the definition of interpretation is seeing what one wants to see through the act of choosing to see it. But then the rest of the journal entry points out that mind is not natural. Natural does not make choices. Natural is. Now that's also true. Natural doesn't make choices. If you have observed awareness at all, you notice awareness just is. Awareness doesn't make decisions. Mind is making decisions. So what's happening if you are choosing not to buy into the thought, I'm the scum of the earth, or not to buy into the thought, suffering is more real than truth? You know, somebody might say to you, that's still happening, that choice is still happening at the level of mind. And it is. But it's a reverse action of mind. Instead of a grabbing a hold of an idea, it's a letting go of an idea. And since the mind really is just a collection of ideas, especially ideas believed, every time mind chooses to let go of an idea, mind is, you could say, reducing itself. You know, it kind of reminds me of, in A Course in Miracles, there's a line that says, the Holy Spirit can use everything that the ego made. So the ego made choice, the ego made believing, the ego made decision making. But the Holy Spirit, or the right mind, can use all of that to reverse the process, to undo the process. But when we are back to awareness, then there is just being. Awareness isn't the level at which the letting go is happening. That is still happening at the level of mind. But if we don't let go of the level of mind, if we don't allow mind to reduce itself by reversing its decision-making process, then we stay completely engaged with mind. So this reversal process, this undoing process, this unlearning process happens, and then we come back to where we begin to have experiences of the pure awareness that doesn't decide, the pure awareness that just is. So again, quote number 699. Wow, we're getting up here. We're going to be starting 700 next week. Quote number 699, the very nature of the mind is stupidity. Yeah, NTI calls it confusion. The very nature of the mind is stupidity. I mean, think about it. How stupid is it to believe you are the scum of the earth? What benefit does that have? It's kind of a stupid idea, don't you think? And it's kind of, you know, in a non-judgmental way, let's just go ahead and admit, and we're kind of stupid for continuing to believe it. There's nothing intelligent about that. It's stupid to believe that suffering is more real than truth and therefore to continue to suffer. There's nothing intelligent about that. So why don't we choose to be intelligent, act from our intelligence, and begin to start letting go of these ideas, right? So the very nature of the mind is stupidity. And then again, my journal entry number 699, mind interprets, which is to see what one wants to see through the act of choosing to see it. Mind is not natural. Natural does not make choices. Natural is. And of course, that's pointing to awareness. So that's as far as I'm going to go today. Next week we will start with 700. And I want to thank you all for being present and listening as I shared my journal. And I will release the mic. See you guys again at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the Daily Contemplation. Bye.
Thank you so much, Regina. It's always a pleasure to hear. And enjoy your sharing.